is up. It's the Pro Football Focus Fantasy Podcast. My name is Jeff Ratcliffe, and it is Tuesday, May 21st. June's almost here. May flying by, and I guess we're in mock draft season. I guess that's what we'll call it, because after the NFL draft, you get those couple weeks, the dynasty kind of honeymoon period after the NFL draft, but that kind of faded quickly, as it tends to do. Rookie draft sort of winding down, and now it is officially mock draft season. And over at PFF, we just did a killer mock draft with a bunch of big names from around the industry. A lot of folks you'd recognize, former PFF overlord, PFF fantasy overlord Mike Clay, who's now at ESPN, Michael Fabiano from NFL Network, NFL.com, Brad Evans from Yahoo, Jake Seeley from The Athletic, Evan Silva from Parts Unknown right now, formerly of Roto World, John Paulson of 4 for 4, Mike Wright of the Fantasy Footballers, and then PFFers Scott Barrett, Daniel Kelly, Scott Spratt, Dan Schneier, and yours truly. So a murderer's row in this mock draft. And what I think is so fascinating is that, you know, among the general public, folks who aren't listening to a fantasy football podcast right now, by the way, shout out to you for doing that. But those folks, the whole idea is like, why are you doing this now? You're not going to figure out anything. And it's like, yes, we actually are. The trends that ultimately play out in August and early September, depending on when you have your home league drafts, those trends are being set really as far back as February, but especially right now. Like, this is the time when people are writing their draft guide magazines that'll be on the stores and Barnes & Noble and Walmart and whatever. This is the time when folks like us are writing a fantasy draft guide PDF. This is the time when big name sites are releasing rankings that essentially will move a little bit, but generally speaking, the trends are being set now. They're not set in August. That's when the rest of the population catches up. And so what I find so interesting is annually, it's right about now when I'm able to start to put my finger on the overall strategy in regular drafts for the year. And year over year, I don't see dramatic shifts. I mean, there's one exception. The exception when we went off the deep end, what was that, 2016, when we went off the deep end of zero RB, and a lot of folks who really didn't understand how to use zero RB effectively used it, and it blew up in their faces because you had like down years from DeAndre Hopkins and Allen Robinson and all of that. You know, it was a bad year for zero RB, no doubt about it. That after that, we saw a pretty dramatic shift in strategy, and the pendulum swung way back to RB early and often. But for the most part, year over year, there's only subtle tweaks that we make to overall strategy. And I did observe that in this particular mock draft. So I want to kind of go through some of the general thoughts. And of course, if you want the results, you can check them out, profootballfocus.com. We did a nice write-up on it. It's free. You can check it out if you aren't a subscriber to the site. So anyway, the draft starts RB, 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 RB. Did you get that? That was 9 of them in a row. 9 RBs. I was the 9th. I was in the 9 hole, and it went Barkley, McCaffrey, Elliott, Kamara, Bell, Gurley, Gordon, Johnson. I went with James Conner. Now, why did I do that over Hopkins? Why did I do that over Devontae Adams? Or even somebody like Julio Jones or Odell Beckham Jr. or whoever, you know, I think you could make a debate for a bunch of wide receivers in the number one spot. I have Hopkins there. But so why did I do it over Hopkins? Because I wasn't confident on what might have been there when it came back around to me. So I figure that what's going to come back around to me, and I actually do have Hopkins ranked above Connor in my overall rankings. This is where you have to kind of be a little bit flexible with your rankings. And just because Hopkins is ahead of Connor, you don't have to be a robot and be like, I must draft DeAndre Hopkins over Connor. You know, you could be a little bit flexible because the difference between the two is not significant. So I was more confident what would come back to me at wide receiver there than what I would have at running back, because I didn't think anything was going to come back to me. I thought there was a chance that we could have had 12 running backs off the board by the time it came back to me. Now, it didn't necessarily work out that way, but I was still happy because Mixon goes at the turn. So 10 running backs in the first round. Now, Hopkins and Adams went after me. Then Thomas goes on the turn. Julio, Beckham. I end up taking Antonio Brown on the swing in the second round. So I started out with Connor and Antonio Brown. I think another interesting topic here, and it was something that came up before I go any further, topic in the first round, something that came up on Twitter. And the question was, Barkley, number one overall, do you like that given how bad the Giants offense is? And my response was the Giants offense good last year? I mean, was I watching something different than everybody else? I don't think so, right? That was one of the running jokes of the year. They weren't that good, but you can be a quality fantasy asset on a quote unquote bad team. You don't necessarily, those two aren't dependent of each other. You know, they can certainly operate independently. So I don't have a problem with Evan Silva taking Saquon first overall, but the legit debate is, I think you could take any one of these four. I brought it up on the last podcast. I said I wouldn't talk you out of taking McCaffrey first overall. He goes second overall in this draft. I wouldn't talk you out of that. I wouldn't talk you out of taking Ezekiel Elliott. I wouldn't talk you out of taking Alvin Kamara. None of those guys. So that's the legit debate. And really, if you're first overall, first and foremost, if you have that number one overall pick, that is just one pick in the draft. And a lot of people think about it, you know, like they put so much thought into that first pick and kind of neglect other things. And what I will say is, I don't want to say that the first overall pick isn't important, because that would be kind of foolish of me. But it isn't as important as a lot of people might think that it is. I love the pick, don't get me wrong, but really where we make our teams in fantasy drafts is not with the first overall pick. It's really once we get past like that top 60 or 70 in rankings, because you'll see this, people in your home leagues won't do a lick of prep. They won't do anything other than go to ESPN.com or whatever fantasy site they can find and print out some rankings before the draft, and then just draft off of those rankings. They're going to look like they know what they're doing in the first four or five rounds. They are. They're going to look like they know what they're doing, because generally speaking, the difference between rankings in the industry, even folks who kind of march to their own drum, in the top 50, top 60 in those rankings, which top 60 takes you through six rounds, there's not that much difference. So this person is going to look like they know what they're doing. But by the time they get into the 7th and 8th and 9th and 10th rounds, where they're starting to come across players who they've never heard of before, this is where their teams go awry, and this is where we actually start to dominate. So don't sweat that first overall pick that much. I would say pick the guy you endorse the most. Pick your horse. I don't think there's a wrong answer, though. I really don't. Of those four, I don't think there's a wrong answer. If it was me right now, I would still go Saquon. I agree with Evan, but it is super close. And ask me in August, and that might change. That might change as I'm, you know, in the thick of writing the fantasy draft guide right now. That might change. So anyway, running backs go early and often. Now, only two more running backs go in the second round. This is the thing. It sort of flattens out after that point. You get that. The top 10 I agree with. Maybe you throw Dalvin Cook and Nick Chubb. I'm a little concerned about Nick Chubb once Kareem Hunt comes back. We just don't know. I think it's fine that he goes off the board as the number 12 running back. That's fine. But those top 10, I wanted to get at least one of those guys. My fear was that, hey, one might not have come back to me. So and ultimately, I guess I was right. Now, wide receivers go obviously in the second round, but the tight end thing is the next thing that I think is really fascinating about drafts right now. So the big three are going to come off the board in the first three rounds. In this draft, it went Kelce, Kittle, Ertz. It could go Kelce, Ertz, Kittle. Honestly, Kittle and Ertz went back to back. They went at 3-3 and 3-4, right? Barrett took Kelce in the second round right after me. So that was 2-5. So they're all going to go. And then after that point, there's this next tier of four, which in any particular order in this draft, it went Ingram in the fifth, Henry and Howard in the sixth, Ebron in the seventh. I think that's what you're going to see pretty consistently in drafts this year. But, you know, last year I kind of banged the table. Now, I banged the table for tight end premium. Of course, Gronk was at the top of my rankings. That didn't work. But if you went with Kelce or Ertz, who were also in the top three, it was a big three last year as well in the first three rounds, you probably were just fine, right? This year, as I'm looking at it, I don't know if I can take the same stance. And it's maybe, you know, partially because that value cost of Gronk was so significant. I don't think there's going to be a Gronk out of these three this year. I don't think there's going to be a guy who, you know, really disappoints for fantasy purposes out of those big three tight ends. But I'm still a little concerned to the value cost. Like, instead of taking, you know, Juju Smith-Schuster, Barrett took Kelce, you know, Smith-Schuster went right after it. That value cost to me, I don't know if it justifies taking the tight end. And I think it's fine where he took him, but the way that I want to construct my roster. So now I'm looking essentially at that next tier of four, and I don't mind taking these guys if the spot is right. The spot wasn't right for me in this particular draft because the way that it went, Ingram went right before me, Henry went right before me, Howard and Ebron went before it came back to me. So I really didn't have an opportunity where I felt comfortable. Now, what I should have particularly been looking at, and may, you know, and this is where I made a mistake in this one, and this is, you know, part of the process as well. Do as many mocks as you possibly can. Do as many best balls as you possibly can to really get a feel for it so that by the time we get to late August, you just know where these guys should be going and where you can get certain players. I should have been looking at Jared Cook in the eighth round. I ended up taking Andrew Luck because he fell. I had him as a sixth round grade, and I broke the seal on quarterback. But I should have been looking at Jared Cook in the eighth round. I think he is locked in as the number eight tight end. I think he is a primo value right in that range. And he's the guy where if the plan works, you don't have to prioritize an early pick. You can pound running back and wide receiver in the first five or six or seven rounds and then still potentially have Jared Cook there. The more I look at it, the more that makes a lot of sense to me. Now, of course, we're talking in May, and things could change dramatically between now and September with his ADP. He could shoot up. If all of a sudden people are talking about Jared Cook as like a six-round guy, then it's a different scenario. But as an eighth-round guy, I really like that. That was not the move that I made in this particular draft. He went in the ninth round, by the way. Is not the move that I made, but it is the move that I probably should have considered making now that I look back at it. Now, quarterback in this particular mock draft, oh man, it's like when you get industry folks together, they just sort of play chicken with each other, who can wait longest at quarterback, and that's pretty much what happened here. Now, Mahomes went in the third round. I found that interesting in an industry draft. I have a fourth round grade on him on my board. We know if you've listened to this podcast before, we know. Yeah, I'm going to be lower than most drafters on quarterback. And it's not a knock. It's just the replacement level. I mean, you're talking like a replacement level guy is typically around the 19th quarterback in a league. I mean, in this league, 18 quarterbacks were drafted. Tom Brady was the 18th quarterback drafted. Is there that significant of a gap? I mean, there's a gap, obviously, between Mahomes and somebody like Brady, but it's not as significant as the running backs and wide receivers you're getting in that range and then the guys who you're going to be able to get off of waivers, for me at least. So anyway, the next quarterback doesn't go off the board until seven. That was Deshaun Watson. I ended up taking Luck in the eighth. In the ninth, Baker goes, Rodgers, Russell goes. In the 10th, Cam goes. In the 11th, very interesting, Matt Ryan goes. And then Kyler goes as the ninth quarterback off the board. Then Breeze, which is nice value there in the 11th. In the 13th was a little bit of a run because there were some guys who waited. Mike Wright only took one quarterback. He took Jared Goff in the 13th round. Mike Clay waited until the 14th round to take Ben Roethlisberger, which is great value. The moral here is that I think even in home leagues, which home leagues today are not like they were in, let's say, 2009, 10 years ago. In 2009, you might see three or four quarterbacks go in the first round of a home league, like a 12-team home league, and it might even have been more than that. Sometimes it got out of hand, right? Because it was always like a sort of drink the Kool-Aid, like, oh, I started the trend, and then everybody starts, you know, taking quarterbacks, you know, whatever. Even in like crazy quarterback early home leagues now, I don't think that happens as much. I'm in a league that historically was like that. It's not like that anymore. Now, quarterbacks go earlier than they maybe quote-unquote should, according to fantasy industry pundits, but they don't go as early as they used to. So the moral here is that even if your league goes quarterback earlier than, you know, an industry league, which is very likely, you're still going to get value. There's so much depth at the position. I mean, you're talking upside depth. Like, Carson Wentz is the 13th quarterback off the board. Josh Allen is the 17th quarterback off the board. Jameis Winston is the 11th quarterback off the board. You can get safety plays as well later on. Ben Roethlisberger, as I mentioned, the 15th quarterback off the board. Tom Brady, safety play, 18th quarterback off the board to Evan Silva in the 15th round. There are going to be guys like that this year where you can totally wait. You can just totally wait. So essentially, what we're putting together here is a very brief early draft strategy. And I don't think it has to be that complex. Like, we could sum this up in 60 seconds if we had to, right? Think about it like this. In the first round, try to grab one of the top 10 running backs. In the second round, if another one is still there, take him. If not, start hammering wide receiver. And continue to take the best player available at wide receiver or running back through the next, I don't know, five or six rounds. So get through round 1 through 6, 1 through 7, and just all running backs and wide receivers. Keep scooping value. Make your opponents pay for letting value slip down the board. Then Jared Cook. Then after that, keep an eye on quarterback. Where is the value of quarterback? If not, backfill with wide receivers and running backs. And then, you know, once you find that perfect value of quarterback, pop it. I would say keep an eye on a safe guy and keep an eye on an upside guy. So that Carson Wentz, Tom Brady, that's not a bad combo, right? So, you know, Matt Ryan, if you can get him at a value, if he falls, get him at a value. And like, the he went in the 11th round in this one, 10th, 11th round, and then Jameis Winston. You know, whatever, safe and upside. That's it right there. That's the strategy right there. Now, often very easy to articulate and sometimes very difficult to accomplish, but that's it. And by the way, team defense in this league, in this draft, the Bears go in the 13th round. I'm seeing the Bears ADP in the 8th round right now, which is bonkers to me. Silly. In the same round that you're taking, you know, these upside wide receivers like Cortland Sutton, Christian Kirk, Dante Pettis, James Washington, these are all guys who went in the 8th round, somebody takes a defense. To me, that is just, it's lunacy. There are so many good values to be had in the second to last round with team defense that I would not prioritize it whatsoever. Let somebody else waste that value. And then obviously same thing with kicker, you know, don't waste any earlier picks on kicker, anything earlier than like the second to last round, you know, the third to last round, that might be pushing it, but I don't mind what Mike Wright did in this. He took Greg Zuerlein in the 14th round. He took the chalk kicker around ahead of typically where a lot of people might make that move. You know, historically the move has recently been take that kicker in the second to last round to get a jump on your competition, then take your defense in the last round. Mike did it around before that, and I don't mind it because he followed up, took the Ravens defense in round 15 and then drafted Albert Wilson in the last round, so some upside at wide receiver. Yeah, don't mind that at all. That's fine. It's an interesting little approach, variation on the conventional approach there. So anyway, there you have it. Early observations from the PPR mock draft of death. This one was a tough one. No value fell. Everybody knew what they were doing. We'll continue to flesh out the thoughts on strategy as we move through the offseason here, but go check that out at profootballfocus.com. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Jeff Ratcliffe, and we will be back very soon. Remember, use that hashtag RatPack, by the way, on social media. That way I know you're a listener of the show, but we'll be back really soon with another edition of the pod. So for Pro Football Focus, I'm Jeff Ratcliffe, and I'm out of here.